and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Sunday, early Sunday afternoon today. Got to get out of the way of one of our guests, Royce Young, who is a long-suffering Cleveland Browns fan. And so we've got to, we couldn't do it Sunday night because Baker Mayfield's leading the Browns into Pittsburgh.
I've waited my whole life for this game, right, Brian, literally, because I've been a lifelong Browns fan for 2.5 years.
You know, tell you something, Royce. Last 2.5 years, you could just duplicate that out, you know, until this season. You'd get the same. The last few years have all been the same.
I've gotten the idea. Okay. Yeah.
And I'm afraid to say tonight you'll probably get another idea of how it's probably going to go as well.
Well, the week leading up to it has gone just about according to plan, right, in terms of Browns
perfect,
history.
So, perfect. Yeah. And joining us from Boston is Tim Bontemps. Tim, you're Buffalo Bills. You grew up a Buffalo Bills fan. Congratulations.
A lot of friends and family were very excited yesterday with the big win over the Indianapolis Colts. First playoff victory in 25 years for the Bills.
Yeah, let me just say that one hit me hard because 1996 was the year I graduated high school, and it was the first time I thought that had been 25 years. So I was like, oh, terrific.
Sign you're old.
That's right. That's what I got away from. From that stat, which was impressive nonetheless. So, guys, the NBA right now is, and I guess not surprisingly, but really gripped by the battle against a COVID outbreak and the health and safety protocols that they have put in place to keep the league going are now 3 weeks in, affecting more and more teams. And we're getting some wonky situations and some unusual situations. And I think the league is being proactive. But ultimately, I think we're in for a period here where there's just going to be a lot of confusion and uncertainty. And I don't really know there isn't an easy answer here. And Tim, you were covering the 76ers yesterday, where they had an afternoon game against Denver and they ended up with basically 7 players. I guess 8 were in uniform. And I feel like we're going to be seeing this more. And you wrote about this, about the whole situation facing the league, right, on ESPN.com about it. I really want to give leeway to the league because I recognize what they are doing is trying to play through a pandemic. And I'm saying those words, not being flippant, play through a pandemic, which means that they are going to do what is needed to be done to try to protect the players, but continue to play the games. And that is a sloppy, imperfect goal and mission. And we've seen other sports do it. And the NBA has a set of challenges that's a little different than those other sports, but they're going to try to do it. And as a result, just inherently, it's going to be difficult. But I don't know if it's being handled the best way. And what happened in Philly yesterday around the Sixers, and I'm not so sure that the Sixers handled this the best way either, even though they were dealt a difficult hand. What did you think of the way this is going to go down, and where do you think we're headed with this?
Well, Brian, last month, the day before the season started, Adam Silver had a conference call with reporters. And when he got asked about potentially suspending the season, this was part of his answer. "I've acknowledged it was a mixed sort of health and safety and economic decision to start our season, meaning the health and safety has always been our highest priority. But we recognize that if we hadn't started the season, there's also very dire economic implications, not just for the immediate members of the NBA community, but those tens of thousands of jobs that are dependent on the league." And though that pair of sentences sums up the situation that the NBA finds itself in. And that's not to say that the NBA shouldn't be playing games. That's not to say that this isn't an incredibly complex situation, as Royce knows firsthand from what happened back in March when he was on hand when the season got suspended back when Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell tested positive in Oklahoma City. And, you know, we saw what happened yesterday, not only with the Sixers, but the Boston Celtics now have 7 players, potentially 8 players, potentially out for tonight's game that I'll be at against the Miami Heat because of the contact Celtics, tracing.
The Celtics reached a brand new threshold in the NBA. We just saw within the last 2 weeks, we saw the threshold of teams taking 2 tweets to list their injury and health and safety protocol report. The Celtics reached, I believe they were the first team, correct me if I'm wrong, who now had to issue a three-tweet injury report.
Yeah, nine players potentially not able to
it's
play
never
today.
Good. This is a new threshold in the NBA. You never want to have a two-tweet injury report. And if you have three-tweet injury report, we really got problems.
Yeah, no, and look, like, your point about this is correct, right? And what I wrote about last night on the site is that, look, the NBA back in the summertime, they go to a bubble, they have success in a bubble, they're able to keep the virus out, they're able to finish the season. And
right, and we get used to the concept that the virus is not there.
That's right.
It's not a part of day to day life.
That's right. And now the NBA is learning what baseball learned this summer and what the NFL learned this fall, which is that if you're trying to play a contact sport in the middle of a pandemic, out of the protective safety of a bubble, you're going to have the virus infecting your league. And this is what the NBA now has to deal with. They have multiple teams with several players not available. We have Tim McMahon reporting this morning that the Dallas Mavericks had to shut down their facility because they've had Maxi Kleber test positive on top of prior positive tests that required some of their players to have to stay in Denver. We've had the Chicago Bulls have to leave players in Washington earlier this season. We have, the Sixers had seven players yesterday. The Celtics could have eight players tonight. This is where the league is at, and they're, because of the economic calamity that would ensue if the league is unable to play games, they're going to do everything they can to push forward and get through this until they can get to the other side of it and have a vaccine and, be able to at some point resume normal life. But until then, or until this gets to a point where they have to stop because there's so many players that they can't play, this is the uncomfortable situation that all of us are in, and I don't see it ending anytime soon.
All right, Royce, let me bring up three things that I think are challenges. And I'm not assigning blame. I'm just going to say that there are challenges. One, the league, because they're protecting the players' privacy, has to be careful with what they say when players are shut down. We can kind of tell when a player is announced to be out 10 to 14 days. We can kind of make an educated guess that the player's tested positive, like has just happened with Michael Porter Jr. in Denver. He was out for 7 days for contact tracing, and then they announced he's out for 10 to 14. They didn't say why, but we can guess. But sometimes they shut guys down, and you don't know how long it's going to be, and it's a mystery because they're trying to protect their privacy, which is fine, but that causes an issue with not only with teams, but also with what goes around the NBA, which is betting, which, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like this is not something the NBA is deeply involved in. I don't know how anybody can bet any of these games unless they're putting their bet down as the players are walking on the court. Two, there is this situation where guys are getting pulled from the middle of games. It has now happened twice, including the game you covered last night, which was Memphis, where Jonas Valanciunas was yanked at halftime. 2 days, I think it was 2 days after Seth Curry was yanked at halftime. And I'll save three for a minute, but I just want, talk about what happened with you last night, what happened with the Grizzlies and that whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, he checked out with about 5 minutes left in the second quarter. And look, it was a little unclear whether or not, word had come down to Taylor Jenkins and the Grizzlies bench of pull Valanciunas now, or if it was a halftime decision. It's the indication seemed to be that the Grizzlies bench was given word to get Valanciunas out of the game, which, I mean, again, Brian, I mean, when you think about it, just logistically, to think that there's a guy out on the court playing and the game's going on, and then somebody says, wait a second, you got to get him out. Like, I mean, that's such a bizarre circumstance.
To relate, just to show how far we've just come in this, think of back in March, if in that game that you were at in Oklahoma City, where they were just like, oh, Rudy Gobert has COVID, he's not going to play, he's a scratch tonight. Okay, tip it off, let's go. That's essentially, kind of the concept, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially, like you said, that if going back to March, that was kind of the hang up with it. You know, that game was in jeopardy very, very quietly throughout the day because they were testing Gobert the night before. Nobody thought that he actually had it. It was kind of this preposterous thing. I was like, well, let's just go ahead and give him the COVID test. And so, like, you know, they didn't get the results of that test within, you know, 20 minutes to tip off.
Didn't have rapid testing back.
Right. And but again, it shows the contrast of where things stand now that, you know, you're willing to start a game with a guy maybe having it. But, you know, something Bontemps said that I think, you know, I thought a lot about, you know, the NFL has gone through this. You know, we saw the Denver Broncos play with a scout team wide receiver at quarterback. I mean, teams have had to, you guys may know off the top of your head, did they have to postpone one game in the NFL this year, maybe two?
Well, they pushed games back.
But they moved, yeah, right. They moved a lot of games around.
They moved them back. They built some stuff into their schedule to try to do that. And, you know, we obviously saw it in baseball with, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals, Miami Marlins. You know, they basically took weeks off to get things under control. Okay, but so, like, it's kind of normalized that, like, you're going to deal with that. The NBA expected that. The difference in the NBA is versus the NFL and Major League Baseball is the limited amount of players on your roster. I mean, you saw it, like, we're talking about with the 76ers and now with the Celtics. Like, you lose you have an outbreak on your team and you lose six or seven guys on top of maybe an ankle injury or a hamstring pull or something like that. Like, it can become very challenging to get to the eight players that you're required to have. And it's a little bit different when you have 53 on a roster in the NFL and you just need, you know, I don't know, functioning, you know, 30 guys or something. So, like, the outbreak nature in the NBA is a lot different. Here's a question I just was thinking of. You know, as the G League gets ready to start up, and you guys may know this answer, I have no idea, is there going to be some sort of built-in, like, call-up system? Because those guys will be in a bubble, and so they can kind of be like the safety net for maybe some of these outbreaks where, you know, the G League now suddenly becomes that much more important for the call-up nature of, like, well, these guys, you know, because right now if you're trying to bring somebody in, well, you've got to quarantine them for 14 days, and so there's no point in it. But if they're in the G League, they're being tested daily, they're in, like, the bubble, like, will there be a way to call them up immediately?
I think even in that situation, Royce, like, if the G League is playing this bubble in Orlando and you have to get to, let's just say, Portland, right? Let's say Portland has an outbreak and needs people. You still have to get to Portland, right? And so in theory, I would imagine the problem with this, to your point, compared to normal injury situations, and Bobby Marks has talked a lot about this, who obviously spent decades doing this with Brooklyn, is that you can have a bunch of injuries and then go, oh, hey, we're down four or five guys. Let's sign two or three guys with a hardship exception so we can have a functioning roster for a couple of weeks until our guys get back, right? But in this situation, like, the Celtics went from having, you know, 14 guys available to having eight guys available. And you can't
overnight.
Right, and you can't bring in two or three players because even if they are in some kind of a bubble situation, they still have to come to where you're at and test for a couple of days to make sure that they're still virus free, and you're still spending two or three days without these guys. And that was Doc Rivers' concern after yesterday's game. I mean, look, they had seven players for this game. They have three rookies, Isaiah Joe, Dakota Mathias, and Tyrese Maxey play over 40 minutes. And, you know, if these guys who are in contact tracing are out for a week, you know, they have a back-to-back Monday and Tuesday. They have four games in 6 days. They might have to play these guys 40 minutes a game for a week. And that's that, like, his point was that, look, I'm obviously concerned about COVID and I'm not saying it's not a big deal, but we also have to be concerned on the other end about these guys' health who can play, you know, and now we see Thomas Bryant's out with an ACL. We've had all these injuries early on. I mean, it's just a very fraught situation for the league on all sides now.
One of the things is the health and safety, the contract tracing protocols. It doesn't just affect your team, but it also affects your people in your life. And you know, if folks in players' lives either test positive or have inconclusive tests, that affects. Because, like, so for example, Valanciunas, to go back up on that, they pull Valanciunas after halftime of that game. He is now out for contact tracing. And now we're thinking, oh my God, well, he's just sat around with these guys and play with these guys. Are all these guys going to be in contact tracing? And the Grizzlies say, no, it's not for COVID. But then today, Sunday afternoon, they announce he's cleared and fine. And it was COVID related, not for him, but, you know, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty here. And again, it's like, people can ask the question, how is Seth Curry allowed to go onto the court when he's got an inconclusive test? And this is the issue. The players are constantly being tested. They are tested every single day, and on game days they are tested twice. So the reality is, in some form or another, they're always waiting for results. There's always some result that has just been given, or they are waiting for it. And
that, Brian, is the NBA's entire plan, right? It's their plan is to test heavily,
yes,
and catch it as fast as possible. And that's how they're going to try to keep going forward.
That's the NBA's defense on everything, is that our robust testing is going to create the firewall that's going to keep us going. And then they've also left the back end of the season open-ended so that they can, you know, in the event, you know, so far only one game has been postponed. The Rockets coming out of the gate. And they'll just make those games up in the back end of the season. But let me get to where the third point that I think is a struggle is. The struggle is that there is a lot of NBA players who have had COVID. In stories I wrote before the start of the season, I floated, in talking to people, people were saying they thought they were guesstimating probably around 30%. It's probably significantly higher than that. And so as a result, there are players, and we talked about this with James Harden, who have antibodies and are living their life, and even people in their family living their life differently than the players who don't. And this is potentially creating some contact tracing challenges. Mm-hmm. Many of the players we know. Many of the players have self-identified. But there's dozens and dozens that we don't. In fact, there's a couple of teams that I remember talking before the season. There's one team in particular, one of the elite teams, who's most of the team has had it. And I was talking to somebody about this, saying that, you know, this information actually could be valuable for betting an over under for wins. Cause you say, well, this team's probably not going to have, their whole half their team, you know, if 10 guys on their roster have already had it, boy, this team's probably going to not have to shut down at all because their guys have antibodies. And although, you know, the qualification being that nobody really knows how long the antibodies last. And there is instances out there where there has been reinfection. But anyway, but the thing about...
Well, I mean, like, look at, like, you know, that situation played out with Kevin Durant, right?
That's my point.
I was just going to say that.
So here's Durant, who did have it, recovered. And I'm pretty sure when they announced that he was in contact tracing shutdown, that they said he recently had a test and that showed that his antibodies are still active.
Right, right.
But the challenge and the reason that the league has to, you know, and again, none of us are epidemiologists or doctors here, but there's no, it may still be possible, even by the way, after you get the vaccine, even if you have antibodies, to pick up the virus and carry it. So that's why he had to be shut down. But it's hard enough to get these guys to live under the restrictions that they're putting on them anyway. And there's just going to, you know, like James Harden was operating the way he was because he'd already had, for a number of reasons, but one of them was because he already had the virus. He obviously didn't fear getting sick again.
Yeah.
And some of the guys, you know, I can't get into everybody makes their decisions differently, but some of the guys feel like, well, if I get this, you know, I'll be sick for a few days and be fine. Mm-hmm. And for many of them, that was the case.
But to me, Brian, though, that brings up like just the interesting next point, which you referenced the vaccine, but like, you know, look, the vaccine for NBA players is still a ways off. We all understand that. But as you know, and who knows what the world looks like and how and where things stand. But, you know, it seems like common sense would say, look, if you've got a majority of the league vaccinated, then it should change your approach on how you handle testing and contact tracing and all those sorts of things. But like, Kevin Durant, you know, for all intents and purposes is, you know, kind of naturally vaccinated, at least currently. Right. But like the rules still apply to him for the reasons that you said, that you could still potentially pick up the virus and transmit. So like, how long is the league going to be stuck in this loop where, you know, even if you've got like, you know, 90% of the league vaccinated and the rest of players have, you know, there's like, you know, the quote unquote herd immunity in the league. Like, do you have to continue this sort of thing throughout the entire season and into next season?
Just consider the fact that in the bubble too, right? We had several coaches who either were not allowed to go, like Lakers assistant coach Lionel Hollins, or, you know, Mike D'Antoni and Greg Popovich. There was some debate whether they'd be able to coach, right, in the bubble. And now they're just with their teams too, mm-hmm. right? There's that whole factor where you have a lot of older people. And
they're far more exposed now, Tim. That's right.
They're flying around.
They're out in the world. I mean, it's all of this stuff is all floating around all at once.
And by the way, this is very predictable, but there's a bunch of teams who have now gone on 4, 5, 6-game road trips that are coming down with this. It's not, you know, like, no kidding. Cause, you know, I mean, no matter what protocols you take, if you're moving around to 6 hotels in 10 days, you know, your just exposure is just so wide. So, I will say this, there's some funky stuff going on with Philly because Embiid and Simmons were not, am I correct in saying this, Tim? Embiid and Simmons were not out with health and safety protocols. They were out with injuries.
Correct.
But on Friday, so the game was played Saturday afternoon. On Friday, when the Sixers put out their injury report that listed all of their guys who were on health and safety protocols, including Seth Curry, they were not on the injury report.
Well, just to clarify, Ben Simmons was not on the injury report. Joel Embiid was on the injury report, but only because of the health and safety protocols, with an injury.
So, and then they say he wasn't affected by it. And then all of a sudden on Saturday, Simmons and Embiid had injuries.
Correct.
So something's going on there. And so while you definitely respect the integrity of privacy on the health, for players and everything like that, something was funky with those injuries. Either they were hurt or they weren't. And so you got Philly trying to get the game canceled, and all of a sudden their 2-star players have injuries. I mean, maybe they did have injuries, but, you know, Friday night they didn't, and Saturday morning they did.
Well, it just speaks to the complicated nature of all of this, right? Like, look at the Wizards, for example. The Wizards over the past week have played 3 teams, the Nets, the Sixers, and the Celtics, who all have had multiple players sitting out because of health and safety protocol issues, right? Whether it's contact tracing or positive tests. They play the Celtics on Friday. It appears Jason Tatum has a positive test on Saturday. And then because he apparently talked to Bradley Beal in a close conversation after the game, Bradley Beal is pulled out of Saturday's game against the Heat in Washington, but nobody else who played in this game, where Jason Tatum played 35 minutes the night before, does have to sit for contact tracing, right? And, you know, while the league,
yeah, which, you know, Jason Tatum wasn't, you know, guarding guys. I mean, they're doing what they gotta do.
Right. But, I was just gonna say, while the league would argue that if, you know, over the course of, you're not actually next to somebody for 15 minutes over the course of an NBA game, right? You know, logically, you can construct that argument. It's still, looking at it from 10,000 feet, it just is, it's a strange thing to see, right? It's just all of this stuff is just complicated and difficult. And, you know, again, as I referenced at the beginning of the pod, when you are trying to make decisions that both balance health and safety factors and economic factors, understandably, because it is a business, this is the kind of murky situations you're going to find yourself in over and over again.
I don't envy them at all. I would just say, though, because some people are asking, well, why don't they just, you know, close it down for a while to get everybody okay and then restart it? I mean, I can't rule out that would happen, but we are nowhere close to that. This is going to churn through this for the foreseeable future. And, you know, you ask yourself, why would they make the 76ers play under those circumstances where they only had seven guys they could run out there, and why they would make them play this next week potentially with only seven or eight guys. The reason that they did that is so that when it happens to the Portland Trailblazers or Team X in 2 weeks, that they're held to the same standard. And going through this NBA season, many of the teams are going to run into problems like this. And right now, today, it's Philly and Boston, and Dallas. And in 2 weeks, it could be three other teams, or it could be no other teams. But the league doesn't want to set the precedent that it's going to, you know, say, okay, well, you're in a tough spot. We're going to just like Royce said, that the Broncos had to play without a quarterback and the Browns had to play without wide receivers 1 week. And that's just the way it's going to be. And yeah.
It's just the reality for the NBA this year. I mean, that's just, it's in, you know, and you make the point of like, you know, why not just shut it down and just get because it's going to happen again. I mean, right. you'd be caught in a constant loop of, okay, shut it down again for a week, I guess, and then start it up again. I mean, it's so to the best of your ability, as much as you possibly can, you just have to keep the games going and try to keep on schedule.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to, but that's what they're going to do.
Right, right. And,
yeah.
Well, I mean, if you want to get the season done at an all reasonable.
And look, every single game that is played is millions of dollars in the players' pockets and in the team's pockets and in the partners' pockets. And so there's nowhere is it written that it has to be a highly competitive game. The game just has to play. And like I said, sports leagues have decided they are playing through the pandemic. And the reason they can do that is because generally everyone has been able to recover, fortunately. So that's where we are. It's going to keep going this way.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
Bontemps, you just brought up Washington. By the way, the Wizards almost won that game last night against Miami, even though they didn't have Beal or Westbrook. And Thomas Bryant suffered an injury 4 minutes into the game, losing their starting center. Another season-ending injury already. The Wizards are struggling badly. Bradley Beal is leading the league in scoring. Wizards are a team that had high expectations for this year and are really struggling. And one of the reasons they're struggling is because Russell Westbrook is he's not the player that he was last year. And Royce, few people know Westbrook as well as you. I have to say, the jury is still out on this, but as you watch John Wall play the way he's playing in Houston, and you watch Russell Westbrook play the way he's playing in Washington, that trade's looking a little rough right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, one of the things that sticks out to me about Westbrook and the way that he's, you know, there was a lot of talk about him wanting to kind of get back to who he is and his style. And I think to a large degree he has. And, you know, we talked about this on the pod, I don't know, whenever the season preview thing, Brian, that like that can be good, but it also be very bad. And, you know, Westbrook, counting it up, I think he's got four triple doubles. I think he had triple doubles in his first four games with the Wizards. He's very close to averaging one right now. His efficiency numbers are horrific. Overall, his PER is under 13 with the roster. And with the raw numbers that he's putting up, like your PER, like typically like tilts pretty well if you're putting up well-rounded numbers. But I think that just goes to show like the efficiency levels, the turnover, his turnovers are out of control. He's averaging over five a game turnover.
And I'm not going to I'm not going to sit here and tell you that PER is everything, but it's a general indicator of, you know, where you're performing. I'm going to read you Russell Westbrook's last five seasons on PER. Okay. In 16-17, which is the MVP season. Okay. 30.6 led the league in PER. Anything over 30 is MVP kind of level. All right. 15, the way PER is calculated stands for player efficiency rating, takes all of your efficiency numbers together and forms and into one number invented by John Hollinger years ago. 30.6 led the league that year. Then we have the couple of years where the next 2 years, he averaged a triple double. Okay. PER 24.7, still very, very strong. That's all-star level. And 21.1. Okay. Now we have
we're
seeing a fall off.
Yeah.
But even 21.1, pretty good. Pretty good. Not ideal, but pretty good. Last year in Houston, 21. Okay. And as you mentioned, 12.9 so far this year. And, you know, part of that is his free throw shooting has just fallen off a cliff.
He's not getting to the line either.
Right. So, I mean, this is a guy who for most of the heart of his career averaged in the mid 80s.
Yeah.
He's at 65% this year. And free throw attempts per game. This is a guy who, again, in 16-17, when he won the MVP, was averaging 10.5. And even last year averaged 7. He's averaging 5 this year, even though he's playing more minutes when he does play.
This is probably just like an observational anecdotal type thing, but I think you see it a lot with players as they kind of hit their post prime decline, Brian, that their free throw attempts just naturally just start coming down. They start playing a different way. They're a little less aggressive. You can go look at Carmelo Anthony was a player that I noticed that was happening very steadily over time. He went from just a high free throw guy. Some of that's usage, but it's just also just style of play. And to me, like, that's just an indicator that Westbrook is not quite, you know, the bulldozer that he was even 3 years ago. And one of the big problems that he's falling back into is the trap of shooting threes. He's just settling for threes all over.
Threes are up, free throws are down, and his field goal percentage is down 10 percentage points.
I mean, what makes him an elite player is that he's an amazing finisher at the basket. And again, that results in him getting fouled. And then he fills in the gaps of his deficiencies in other areas, whether that's rebounding, whether that's just his instincts. You know, he's obviously a gambler on defense, but he makes defensive plays. He's an incredible shot creator. He can straight line drive and get somebody an open corner three. And like, you know, all those types of things are just not. And I want to give Westbrook some grace that he, you know, he's dealing with a hand issue, some sort of dislocated something, wrist or finger or something, which is affecting him. And his quad was acting up. So, I mean, he's dealing with some minor injuries here. But, I mean, I think the alarm bells are ringing right now when people ask themselves, what's Russell Westbrook going to look like as the athleticism wanes, and how does he age in his NBA career? I think you're seeing it. And I wrote a story about this last season. Like, there's two different types of NBA star as they age. And it's the one that kind of adapts and adjusts and, you know, takes elements of their game and is willing to let things go and embrace other areas. And then there's the one that just like puts the pedal to the metal and burns the candle until there's nothing left. And like all indications would say, Russell Westbrook is going to be that guy that runs the gas tank to empty and the car just like explodes and flies off a cliff. Like, you know, at the end of back.
Yeah. But the car is not going to be paid for. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. Bontemps, yeah. Is the car won't be paid for.
I've long compared Russell Westbrook to Allen Iverson in that Russell Westbrook's entire career is based on him doing what he wants to do and playing the way he wants to play. And it's made him an iconic figure like Allen Iverson in that his defenders defend him to the wall and always will, right? Just like Iverson. And to Royce's point, just like Iverson, his career almost certainly seems destined to end in flames because he had a game that was built almost entirely on his superhuman athleticism. And naturally, to Royce's great article last year summed it up, right? As a guy like him ages into his late prime and beyond, he needs to be able to downshift and play in a different way. And like Iverson, I don't see Westbrook ever admitting that that is the case. And in some ways, I'm not sure he's going to be able to do that because his shooting has gotten worse and his shooting was never good to begin with. Right. So there isn't
that's like step one in aging, right, Bontemps? I mean, like,
that's right.
If you can, like Jason Kidd, he aged that's gracefully.
Right. That's
because
right.
He was able to kind of find a second career in shooting.
That's right. And I just do not see, I don't see Westbrook believing he has to do that. And I don't see Westbrook being able to do that because, like you said, everybody brings up Jason Kidd, but like, that's the exception to the rule for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's very hard to go from being a, you know, star player to a role player. You see, you know, Vince Carter had success with it. Jason Kidd had success with it. But the list of guys who have done that successfully is pretty short for a reason. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Russell Westbrook now has the single worst contract in the NBA, but, you know, it's pretty by a pretty healthy margin. And to Brian's point, you know, yes, John, it's early, but John Wall clearly looks better than him. And when you look at the situation this Wizards team is in, now losing, you know, a promising young center.
John Wall's 2 years younger. I mean, he does, you know, that's a factor.
John Wall is also a player who his game is more built on, you know, he is a scoring point guard, but he also is one of the best point guards ever at setting up other people for shots. And that's not necessarily Russell Westbrook's game, right? Russ gets assists in part because he sucks the defense to him so much that then other shots are created, whereas John is a master at creating open shots for others. And, you know, it's a difficult situation in Washington because now they lose Thomas Bryant. They obviously make this John Wall trade and now they're under 500 and, you know, Bradley Beal's now out for a while and he's been playing unbelievably well. I saw him in Boston on Friday and he scored 40 and 35 minutes after scoring 60 in the game before.
He had 101 points in the last two games.
Just remarkable. He's playing out of his mind and it doesn't matter. Right. So the bigger picture thing to take away from this for me is that to me, Bradley Beal is the number one guy who could shift the landscape for me even more than James Harden if he becomes available in a trade because of how portable he is to any team in the league and he fits in any system. And if the Wizards go off the deep end, that puts them in a situation where maybe Bradley Beal decides, hey, this situation isn't for me. And if that happens, he is, to me, the biggest potential chip to come on the market. And that's kind of what I'm watching for with this whole Wizards thing with Westbrook, now Bryant's injury and everything else, is that could Bradley Beal become available? And if he does, that could be a real game-changing moment for the league this season.
I thought you were about to blow my mind, Tim, and say – and you were going to suggest that Washington and Houston trade Bradley Beal for James Harden. I thought you were about to go there. I was like, wow.
Houston should do that. Houston should do that, and it would be fascinating. But I have a feeling, Washington should do that, but I have a feeling that they will not.
Yeah, John Wall, and again, he's played five games because he's holding out of back to backs. Plus, they had he was in contact tracing earlier himself. But he's shooting 48% in those five games and looks good. Looks like he's moving really, really well. So sitting here, what is it, maybe 6 weeks from the trade, 5 weeks from the trade, five or 6 weeks from the trade? Not decided yet, but worrisome for Washington. Just the player swap. You know, they have the exact same contract, but then you factor in that Washington – gave away a first round pick in that trade. And then the way that they made the trade, the pick is protected for 4 or 5 years, which sounds good because the last thing you want to do is give away a pick and then have it be a high lottery pick and then you lose it. You want to protect your lottery picks. But the reason that's problematic is that in the event that the Wizards need to make a trade to try to improve,
to try to do something to try to get into the playoffs, to do something to try to, you know, stem off an injury, or to, you know, try to do something to help Bradley Beal stay invested. They now can't trade a pick because it's in the NBA, it's known as encumbered. They, you know, now they're hamstrung. So there's an opportunity cost that comes with it, in addition to the idea of actually making a tough trade. So worrisome right now.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Before we go, I do want to talk about another point guard at the opposite end of the career spectrum. And that's the rookie in Charlotte, LaMelo Ball, who had a triple-double Saturday night, youngest player ever to in a win over Atlanta. Atlanta, by the way, struggling right now. Four straight losses. Trae Young got banged up, and there was a story in The Athletic that came out over the weekend talking about some chemistry issues with Trae Young and his teammates, which, you know, that bears watching. And then Bogdan Bogdanovic got hurt. We're still waiting for results on his knee injury. He had a knee injury on Saturday. That's a topic for a different day. LaMelo had a triple-double. Friday night, I didn't see the game on Saturday, but on Friday night, I did watch most of Charlotte's game in New Orleans. That was a ESPN game, and LaMelo had he didn't have a great game that night, but had a strong game, and he had a step back three against Lonzo in the last like 90 seconds that basically helped ice it. And you know, guys, I was really worried about his shooting. That's one of the reasons I was tepid about him coming into the year. Jonathan Givony, I will say this. Givony had him number one on his board for 14 months, something like that. Never backed down on having LaMelo number one, even though he had some concerns in his game. He's only 19 years old. Bontemps, he's averaging, he's coming off the bench. So, you know, his minutes are going to be somewhat limited. He's only averaging 25 minutes a game. Although more and more James Borrego is, he's finishing with him. He's averaging six assists. He's shooting 36% from three, which is way better than I thought he would. He's had some clunker shooting games, but still 36% from three. If he does that for his career, he'll be just fine. Because he's a terrific playmaker. He's shooting 44% overall, which for a rookie guard is a great number. And then he's just making plays, looking way older than his years, got great size. I was a little bit, let's just wait and see on LaMelo. Only been 10 games, but so far the returns are pretty good.
Yeah, look, I mean, people see the highlights of LaMelo throwing, you know, unbelievable passes on Twitter. And that's kind of a lot of what they see from him. But when you watch full games of him, yes, the shooting is a question and it's something to monitor and will ultimately determine just how high his ceiling is. But he makes a ton of winning plays when he's playing. He's a really good rebounder, and not in the, you know, Royce is very familiar with the debate about Russell Westbrook going back to him, whether like, oh, is Russell kind of getting gifted some rebounds? These are like go in and fight for rebounds.
Gordon Hayward's not like, boxing out for him.
No, that, it's not quite the same thing. But no, he fights on the boards. He's not bad defensively. You know, I'm not trying to say he's you know, Jimmy Butler or Kawhi Leonard or name your great defensive wing player, but he's not bad on defense. And his passing ability isn't just in these highlight passes. I mean, he's got amazing vision. So, you know, when I watch him play, you can see these special moments pop out as you're watching him. And again, I don't know if the shot is going to come all the way around to where it needs to for him to be a true superstar player, but when you watch him play, it's hard to see how he fails, right? Like he at minimum is going to be a really good passing point guard with great size at 6'7 or 6'8 who can hit a three-pointer and can be effective on the boards and is not a sieve on defense. That's a really, really good player. And the shot is just going to determine to me whether he's a superstar or just a really good player. But either way, you know, for a Charlotte team that desperately needed some excitement and a reason to pay attention to them, you know, having him drop the three, it's a pretty big stroke of luck, in my opinion, for them.
Yeah, Brian, you know, you mentioned the game on Friday. He was an assist away from a triple-double in that game.
That's right. He was. He was. Yeah, he wasn't, like, for a rookie, that was a strong game. Let me tell you something. He outplayed Lonzo in that game. Mm-hmm. that I can tell you. He outplayed Lonzo in that game.
Look at his numbers for January. You know, where I think he started to kind of show his true progression. It's 14.5 points, 7.3 rebounds, 7.5 assists. And the biggest thing that sticks out to me in all of his numbers, Brian, is in January he's under 2 turnovers per game, but just overall he's right at 2. And for a rookie that's got the ball in his hands a lot, that's making plays, that's making flashy passes all the time, he takes care of the ball. He makes good decisions. We talked about Jason Kidd earlier. I mean, I hesitate to make comparisons, but like he really does, he emulates a lot of Jason Kidd type. You know, style and his it's like a 6'7" Jason Kidd in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I'll tell you what, the 2018 draft, the top three, the decisions made in the top three, it was 18, right? Ayton, was that 18 with Ayton, Bagley, and Doncic? That was a defining. Decisions that were made in that half hour, 45 minutes. I don't know if it'll go down because I don't know if I don't think any of these guys is Luka, but obviously the decisions that were made, you know, this was a complicated one for Minnesota because the two other options they had were point guard and center, and they were committed to max contracts with two best friends who are their point guard and their center. And so they take Edwards, who may end up being a really good player, which allows Wiseman to fall. But, you know, LaMelo slides to 3. Bontemps, I mean, the way that draft goes, you know, could really kind of define a lot of things. Way too early to say, but fascinating situation that allowed LaMelo to fall to Charlotte. And, I mean, like, Jonathan Givony, no matter what you say, his track, you know, this guy has done it and his track record is what his track record is. And he was just like, look, LaMelo Ball is the best player in this draft. And you've heard me talk on this podcast about how much I am really interested in Wiseman's potential. Last year, all these guards who come out, you know, they all have these growing pains. These point guards have these terrible growing pains. LaMelo is, you know, younger than most of those guys. Like LaMelo's 2 years younger than Ja Morant, for example. And Ja comes out and is as impactful as a point guard has been in his rookie year, you know, in a decade. And he's still 2 years younger than Ja. And so to see him do this, it's not just about what he's doing. It's about the projection. And it really makes the decision-making that just happened in this draft so fascinating to watch.
Very rarely do teams get chances to draft in the top three. And when you get a chance to be that high in the draft, by definition, the choice you make is going to wind up having a huge impact on your franchise, right? You go back to Royce's Oklahoma City Thunder, right? That team was built because they had three top four picks in a row and Sam Presti hit a grand slam with all of them. And some of that's luck, but it's also, you know, they also got James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Kevin Durant in three straight drafts. And because of that, they became a championship team. And, you know, if you go back and look, you know, look at the Sacramento Kings. They get one top three pick. First time, I think, ever they pick that high in the draft when they get the second pick. And they take Marvin Bagley ahead of Luka Doncic, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Trae Young, right? Like, that's that kind of decision is going to set your franchise back a long time. And it is way too early to say whether Anthony Edwards is going to be good enough to merit the number one pick, or whether LaMelo works out, or whether James Wiseman works out. But those decisions those teams made and why they made them are going to have ripple effects for a long time. And that's what makes the draft process and just team building itself such an interesting thing, right? Because like Golden State looks at their team and says, hey, James Wiseman's got a chance to be an elite two-way center. And maybe he will be. He certainly shows tons of potential when you watch him play. But when you look at today's NBA and where it's going, and you look at the stuff LaMelo Ball is doing, it would certainly be an interesting thought exercise to put him on that Golden State team with Seth Curry, or Steph Curry, not Seth Curry, and say, hey, what would this look like in a year or two if you had those two guys playing together? So, I mean, it's not to say one's right or wrong, but it's just going to be really, really interesting, to your point, to see how things shake out for all those teams going forward.
Yeah. You know, I'll put it to you this way. So Borrego has started playing Devontae Graham, who is having a miserable shooting season. I don't have his numbers right in front of me, but
something like 5% from three. That's not accurate, but that's about what it feels like.
Like, he has just had so many bad games. He's really struggling for sure. Terry Rozier has had some good games, but to figure out that he's actually played all three of them together at times. And you know, Charlotte's now 5-5. They won a few games in a row. A little disappointing early on. They obviously got a blow when Cody Zeller, who's their best big man, it's fair to say, you know, broke his hand. And they've been trying to sort of stitch it together, playing Bismack Biyombo a lot of minutes. It's a, you know, and PJ Washington, their second year player, who was a good draft pick last year, by the way, in the lottery, in the late lottery, is putting together some good games. So, like, you know, there's been calls in Charlotte to move LaMelo to the starting lineup. And so, but no matter what all that is, and no matter what actually happens with the Hornets this season, looking like a pretty good pick. So, if you get an opportunity, if you get that, if you get an opportunity to see him, definitely try to do that. And by the way, if you need another podcast to listen to, now that you've listened to this one, go check out the Woj Pod. He's got a great interview recently with Utah Jazz owner Ryan Smith. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later in the week.